Welcome to Email After Hours by Senderscore, powered by Validity.
We're your hosts. My name is Guy Hansen.
And I'm Danielle Gallant, and this is Email After Hours. Hi, everybody. As we move further into the digital age, data privacy and security continue to be two of the top things customers prioritize when interacting with brands. We see it all the time. High-profile data breaches make headlines left, right, and center, and consumers are becoming more and more aware of the very real risks that come with sharing their personal information online. As a result, businesses are under pressure to make sure that their marketing strategies and practices are not only effective, but are also safe and ethical. This is particularly true for B2B marketers, obviously. Marketers have targets to hit. The challenge is making those targets in a way that retains trust and confidence for their subscriber base.
And leading into today's conversation, it is a real pleasure to welcome Corey Burt and Courtney Cope to join myself and Danielle on Email After Hours. Corey, would you like to kick off before we jump into today's actual conversation? Tell our audience a little bit about Antiriad and your role there.
Thank you, Guy. And yes, we've had a great time working with you and the Validity team. So yes, Antiriad is a company headquartered in the US. We really specialize in helping marketers get better outcomes, right, across the whole of the funnel. Everything we do is data-driven, right? So data fuels everything. We specialize in the B2B space, and we work across all channels. And for the purpose of today's conversation, email is paramount, right? So my role is I'm actually the chief data and privacy officer for Antiriad. And that marriage of data and privacy is not accidental.
Fantastic. And that's very much going to shape the conversation we have with the two of you today. But before we get to that, Courtney, same question for you. Tell us a little bit about your day job. And I'll frame it by saying, of course, you know, you are the person at Antiriad who is all things email. So in addition to telling us what you do every day, give us a little sense of the email programs you're running, who they're getting sent to. And, you know, when it comes to email, what keeps you up at night?
Oh, that's probably the most loaded question you probably will ask me in this conversation. As far as Antiriad, I am responsible for the corporate email strategy, which essentially kind of covers the soups to nuts, the hygiene, the verification, deliverability, inbox placement, infrastructure, best practices, anything that is related to email, best practices and hygiene, etc. I'm all for that. That's what I do day in and day out. Kari and I, you know, we're also responsible for building Antiriad DB's international database, which plays a large portion into building that and along with the data and privacy aspect of everything with that. So kind of, you know, playing with that, what keeps me up at night is, you know, deliverability, honestly, because without records being delivered, without, you know, recipients receiving those emails, there's no engagement, there's no opens, there's no interactions with those emails. There's, you know, not giving leads to the sales and so forth. So without that being, you know, in there, then it just does not make for a successful campaign.
I've got to tell you, Danielle, it doesn't keep me awake at night. I dream about deliverability.
Lucky you, Guy. Well, and in the intro, you know, we said there is an increasing customer awareness and, frankly, concern about data privacy and security. So, Kari, generally speaking, do you think marketers are doing enough to be transparent with their subscribers about how their data is being used?
I think it's right across the spectrum, right? I think there's some very good actors. There's some people that lead by example. And of course, there's bad actors. And I think that, you know, if you're in the know, you can quickly work out who's who. And I think, you know, the key word is transparency, right? Serving notification about the way you're using data, who it may be transferred to, and also, you know, providing information. You know, one of the things that I think is an interesting paradox is if you've got, like, you know, an Apple iPhone, you get a huge terms and conditions, right? And everyone just scrolls through them, right? And doesn't read it, checks the box, and then, you know, is up in arms about something, right? So you've got that where it's almost overkill. But I see a lot of marketing messages from, you know, big brands, and also things like text messages where they, you know, there's not a call to action. There isn't a way to unsubscribe, or there isn't a link to the privacy policy. And that is obviously, you know, something which is very easy to clean up, right? It's very easy to include that information. But it amazes me how some big brands don't, as it were. So I think, you know, the awareness is really born out of activity by the bad actors, the data breaches, the kind of nefarious use of data. And I think sometimes it's disproportionate, and there is a lot of controlled use of data and positive use of data, which is kind of helping businesses market, you know, new businesses grow, etc. And sometimes some of that, those good actors get overshadowed.
Well, there would be. This is why we have laws, right? And developing laws around this stuff, right? Because it's always born out of someone, some brand may be generous in some of these cases, being sketchy, frankly. And so we need an entity or a way to control it. And that's a perfect segue to my next question, which sort of builds upon what we were just talking about. This has to vary regionally, right? Like, for example, validities. State of SMS marketing report that was recently published said that respondents in the US were 110% more likely than those in Australia and New Zealand, and 121% more likely than those in the UK to say that they continue to sign up for marketing texts for potential rewards despite the perceived data risk. So what challenges do you face when sending emails to different regions, each with their own privacy legislation? How do you keep everything straight?
Well, I wondered when you were going to ask me what kept me up at night. Privacy officer, you nailed it. There is a myriad of data protection legislation globally right now. It's definitely prominent. Everyone has much more awareness of it, and everyone is very vocal about it. And what that's resulted in is a lot of legislation. Mm. Some of it is good and has been well thought out and crafted. Some of it is knee-jerk reaction or politicians pandering to lobbying in their particular state without an understanding of legitimate marketing. Notice the word legitimate there for our GDPR fans, right? And I think, you know, that is where it's very difficult to kind of navigate your way through this kind of myriad of sometimes conflicting legislation. So what we did corporately is, if you think of it now, GDPR is like the granddaddy of privacy legislation, right? So Anteriod, we're a US company, but we just acquired a company based in Madrid, actually. Shout out to Binza and our friends in Madrid. So we're subject to global privacy legislation. We have salespeople in APAC, right? We have customers all over the world. So we adopted GDPR as our corporate standard, even though our headquarters is in Rybrook, New York. And the reason that we did that is there's a lot of really good, solid legislation in GDPR that makes sense, right? If you look at, like, Article 12 around transparency, notification, processing of data, transfer of data. So we kind of use that as a foundation. And then, of course, in the US, locally, where we do a lot of business, we're subject to CCPA And then there's, you know, a lot of other states that are coming on board. So with the US, it's like it's 52 different countries that potentially can have. You are, you know, this is where you should not have touched this subject with me, because I can go on. What I will say to wrap this question up is, we're actually involved in lobbying for federal privacy legislation, right? And that means that data subjects have consistent rights. And you know what? They should, you know? I'm a business person, but I'm also a consumer too, right? And I think there's this blurring of lines now, which basically means that, you know, consumers and businesses, everyone is actually looking at the way data is used. So we're trying our best, right? We also have guides and we have thought leadership. We educate ourselves, people. We're developing an APAC at the moment. So we go country by country.
And of course, the challenge gets more pronounced, because I think it's fair to say that all of us here today, you know, are sort of strong advocates for do the right thing. But not everyone thinks that way. And it often feels like, you know, there is this ongoing critical tension between best practices on the one side and business needs and requirements on the other. And there's always that sort of CMO voice going, send more emails, and, you know, the sort of head of sales going, you know, we need more pipeline. So how do you square that circle? You know, where does that pressure typically come from in terms of you trying to do the right thing and other stakeholders going, let's cut a few corners and just make it happen?
Well, I wondered when you were going to say sales, right? Because that's where the pressure comes.
Yes.
And I think this is where I think corporately you have to have compliance and a privacy officer, that really that's where the buck stops, right? So I kind of get veto and an override on some of these issues, because my job is to keep us safe, right? It's to keep us from not falling foul of whatever privacy legislation we're talking about. It's about protecting our data, our customers' data, protecting our brand, our reputation. And I'm very lucky that in our particular organization, I have CEO and board buy-in from the top down. And you really need to do that. You really need to empower someone to have oversight and overview and keep us safe. Otherwise, you can get salespeople who, don't get me wrong, we need our salespeople to, you know, make our targets, but we can't give them disproportionate control, even if they mean well, in terms of like the old style splatter effect, right? Where they just want to, you know, market everyone and cross their fingers. So that's how we control it. So we actually make sure that we're tight, you know, the whole way around the organization, and we have oversight of everything that's happening.
Fantastic. And Courtney, that question has, you know, similar ramifications specifically for email, doesn't it? Because, you know, there's a big difference between send more email and send the right email. How do you think about that?
100%. The, you know, Kari kind of alluded to the whole spray and pray method, you know, that was, you know, so, you know, 2000s, but it's, you know, it was effective back then, because we weren't as restricted with privacy and such. It was get as many as you can out and just hope and, you know, that something's going to come through. Fast forward to today, and it's very much relevance and transparency. You know, those really seem to be the two biggest words, you know, that as we're pushing these through, that we're sending relevant content. We're sending them something that they are going to want to see and read and attend to, not just, well, maybe they want to, but, you know, we're seeing that the more relevant content and stuff that we're delivering and being transparent with it, that if you download this, this is what we're going to do with your data. And you're giving them that option and that choice, which, you know, definitely helps in the whole experience, that you know, if I download it, I might get contacted. Or, you know what, I can still download it and I won't get contacted. And that's okay. But it's because we're being transparent with them and to the relevant content, it just really brings everything full circle.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Now, we'd already touched on GDPR, the grandfather of data privacy laws. I love that. And I think, yeah, it's been fascinating how it's shaped your own policy. But Danielle, I know you were wanting to put a question to Kari about what does that absolutely look like, right?
Yeah, well, I remember before GDPR, we knew it was coming, but before it actually came into effect, you saw all of these brands send repermissioning campaigns to their subscribers, right? Big, huge campaigns that, Courtney, I'm sure those would have kept you up at night too. Just the list size alone for some of these campaigns. But yeah, so when, you know, Kari, you've said that GDPR is sort of your standard, right? This is what you're operating by while respecting all of these different privacy laws and pieces of legislation. But how do you communicate Interiad's commitment to data privacy and security to your email subscribers in a way that's authentic?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of key words here. We've all talked about transparency a lot, right? But I think the other word is really consistency, right? So I think, you know, what we do is we communicate consistently and authentically and transparently by actually serving up notification and explaining to data subjects why we've got their data, how we intend to use it. The other thing we need to call out, because this is about B2B marketing, is we're not processing sensitive data, right? We're not processing financial data, etc. And I think that once people understand that you're communicating with them with a business aspect, right, to give them information that should be pertinent and helpful in their role and their purchasing decisions, it kind of lowers the stakes a bit. And I think, you know, for consistency as well, we always put a link into our privacy policy, right? It's not required under every piece of legislation, but we include that, and that is very detailed, and it will talk about different regions so people understand. And what we found is by kind of conducting that approach across every country, every market, people don't opt out as much, right? And I think, you know, as we start a campaign, you know, our clients have the, sorry, our the data subjects have the chance to opt out again. And we found that really our opt out rates have gone down. And I think, you know, so that helps Courtney because she's got, like, you know, more of a database pool to engage with, right? It also helps me because, you know, we've never had a formal complaint upheld, right? Because the other thing we try and do is go back to them very quickly. So if a data subject lodges a request, we process it, we're transparent, we tell you how we got the name. And people are busy. They forget that they signed up for this or a particular newsletter. And then when you actually come back with the facts and a time and date stamp, they go, oh, yes, okay, fair enough. And then it's their prerogative to say, well, even so, I don't want to hear from you again ever. And we respect that. Or sometimes, that, you know, the pennies drop and they go, okay, well, you know, I need to be on my A game. I need to know what's going on in the market. I'll keep, you know, going. And then I think that's where things like making sure that the audience is right, right? And going back to legitimate interest, serving up content which should meet the needs of the person within a particular role.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And I think, you know, legitimate interest is one of those phrases which could be small L, small I, or it could be big L, big I. You know, do you genuinely have a legitimate interest? Can you put your hand in heart and say, yep, it exists? But I love that story about, you know, how you know, this approach has had a very positive outcome, you know, reduced opt-out rates is a fantastic story. Because as you say, I mean, that's a key part of your list churn. And, you know, your list has a big dollar value to it. Courtney, have you seen other signs, you know, of positive subscriber engagement from this privacy-first approach that you've been following for the last couple of years?
Definitely. I mean, the open rates are, you know, have increased. You know, we've seen a higher level of engagement. You know, I think knowing that they, you know, could be receiving offers that are going to be, you know, of use to them and something that they're going to be interested in gives a higher, you know, propensity to want to open them and to engage in them, that they know that these are brands that, you know, we're being upfront about, and these are brands that we want to work with. So they're going to trust, you know, in us to, you know, send them relevant, you know, type of content to move and to have those more positive engagements.
We're always thinking ahead, right? Too, when an email, as soon as a campaign's finished or a project is finished, we're on to the next thing. So what is going to be, in your opinion, what will be the biggest challenge or change for organizations concerned with consumer privacy in the next 5 to 10 years? Who knows how many states will have made adjustments to their policy by then? What do you think, Kari?
Well, I think we've covered the kind of legislation, right? And then that's tangible and we know it's coming. I think the if I were to do like a SWOT analysis, right, I think one of the things I would put on there is really tech, right, in terms of their role. And I think, you know, it's kind of interesting. You've got some of the big tech players like, you know, Google, Facebook, Apple, who, you know, depending on your opinion, some people would say were bad actors, you know, providing lots of services. Other people would say, no, you know, they're kind of heralding the consumer and helping them make choices. But, you know, for us as marketers, some of these decisions have actually influenced campaigns, right? And Courtney could actually talk about this, I think, and her experience in this area.
Yeah, especially I think, you know, Apple is a little bit in the forefront as far as, you know, almost putting out there that you can opt out or you can remove yourself from some of these campaigns by not collecting these pieces of data or, you know, this type of information, where they're, you know, looking terms and conditions anytime you sign a contract. Things used to be hidden in there and you would just sign it and you would be okay. But now, you know, people like Apple are putting it in the forefront of you to say, these are the things that you can do and think that you can remove yourselves from. And, you know, how that translates to the campaigns, you know, it's going to fluctuate the response rates. So it makes that line a little bit blurred as far as are these my real numbers or are these slightly inflated because, you know, these other decisions that are being made. So, you know, we've had to tailor, you know, some of our reporting and such to make it a more source of truth into what we're really seeing as far as the engagement, you know, with each of these campaigns.
I think that tech also plays a part with things like bots, right? You know, is it a true open? Is it a true click, right? It's some nefarious artificial intelligence thing that's kind of, you know, running rampant across the internet. So I think, you know, it's things like that which are presenting challenges, and it's really kind of driven by tech. And I think, you know, if you go back to, I agree what Courtney says, right, you've got tech and Apple that are changing their settings. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's fine, but I don't think, you know, there are legitimate campaigns, right, helping businesses grow and hiding some of that engagement does not give visibility and transparency to marketers, right? So I think, you know, we're trying to practice what we preach. We're being very transparent, very open. But then you have tech that comes in and just shuts the door down. Right. So I think, you know, whether you're talking about cookies or iOS settings, I think tech is really kind of driving the bus in some of this space. And sometimes they're ahead of the rest of us, right? They're definitely ahead of the lawmakers in DC, right? Just getting their heads around, you know, what Facebook really is, right? I think that's where it's going to be interesting. I think we don't even know what we don't know sometimes.
If it's any consolation, not just DC, I would tend to think that you know, our sort of lawmakers here in London are not significantly different. This has been such a fascinating conversation, and I have to say that, you know, while we've been talking, what it's made me think of is a famous story about Ryanair, the airline. For our US listeners, you know, it's kind of like Europe's answer to Southwest. And Ryanair is famous for their CEO, Michael O'Leary, and he's traditionally had this highly abrasive approach to customer service. And if it's going to cost him a euro to deliver more customer service, he wasn't going to do it. And they ended up in a point where, you know, they were getting some really terrible press, and that something had to give. And they started investing just a little bit in terms of trying to give their customers a slightly better experience. And traffic went up, bookings went up. And he was interviewed by the press, and they asked him if he'd gone soft. And he said, no, not at all. He said, but if he had known that being nicer to his customers was going to make more money for his airline, he'd have done it years ago. And and I kind of feel like, you know, there's an analogy with today's conversation. I think, you know, you can do the right thing in terms of looking after your customers, in terms of respecting their data, and they will reward you with greater performance, greater engagement, and ultimately they're going to spend more on your products and services.
Absolutely. That's very, very true. And it's served us well. And we, you know, we use privacy as a business driver, as a differentiator, you know, and it's worked. It really has. So we're not changing anytime soon.
That's awesome. Now, we could probably like carry on this conversation for at least another 30 minutes, because it's an awesome conversation. But we do have time constraints for our podcast, so we're going to have to start wrapping it up. But before we say goodbye, we love to finish up with a couple of quick fire questions for our guests, you know, not necessarily related to today's topic. And Courtney, you're going to go first. I mean, we're all sort of email geeks here. So tell us if you have a favorite email KPI. And if you do, why do you like it?
Oh, gosh. Ooh, that's a good one. I mean, typically I'm you know, kind of motivated by food. You know, so if we're looking at any kind of campaigns, you know, any of the holiday campaigns, and are definitely, you know, probably one of my top ones. But we have been working with a newer client recently. It's in the construction realm, and they are doing, you know, very cold email programs. This, you know, I was recently told that we're still doing prehistoric email sends to kind of prove them wrong. You know, they're seeing a 2-to-1 net profit, you know, on their campaigns. You know, they're seeing significant increase in sales, and for what is a fairly niche audience that they're going to, you know, so right now that's a really good one that we're seeing.
That's awesome.
And on the flip side, Courtney, and we don't have to name names here, although Guy and I are anxiously awaiting the day where one of our podcast guests does. What is the worst piece of B2B email marketing that you've seen?
Oh, gosh. You don't have to put everything in one place, you know, that you don't have to put your entire story that, you know, no, you're not going to want to read, you know, pages and pages and images and images. You're going to lose interest. You're not going to see, you know, the value of what you've been sent. So, you know, keep it shorter, keep it simple, keep it relevant. I think that relevant and transparency are the words of the podcast. But I think they're very important, you know, for what we're doing and, you know, to keeping us ahead and keeping us, you know, authentic and ethical in what we're doing.
Brilliant. What about you, Corey?
Well, I'm a big animal lover. So if I see a campaign on any channel that involves animals, sign me up. So I'm kind of conscious of our kind of transatlantic audience here. So for your US listeners, I love the Gecko and the Geico ads for car insurance. I am a Geico customer. There you go. And I'm telling you, that little cute gecko with the British accent had something to do with it. So I definitely like Geico. And then in the UK, you've got to love those meerkats, right, for Compare the Market. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, this is where creative is really important. You can get the audience right. And you can work really hard on the ABM list or the target account list, right? But you've got to have creative that kind of speaks to you and inspires. And I think, you know, even in the US, the Super Bowl ads, anything with an animal in, they always kind of score highly. So it's not always used in B2B marketing, I grant you. But, if I had my way, every ad on every channel would involve a cute puppy and I'd die happy.
you've left me with a note to self. We actually know the Compare the Meerkat crowd pretty well. I think I'll be inviting them onto a future episode of Email After Hours. That would be a great conversation. But Danielle, like a little bit sort of closer to home, what we're going to be doing in 2 weeks' time?
Yeah, in 2 weeks' time, we are going to be talking about the CSA. So everybody, we're going for compliance. We're sticking with the privacy, compliance, best practices, and taking it to just another European destination.
It's going to be awesome. Be sure to tune in next time and hit subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. And don't forget to visit senderscore.com for loads more great resources to help you become a stronger sender.
To all you sleepless senders out there, thank you for joining us after hours and see you next time.